is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me, gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
It's pretty much the consensus that the big losers at CNBC's debate on Wednesday was CNBC itself, and a complete embarrassment of The moderators were a complete embarrassment to themselves, to that network. Are you a villainous cartoon character? Ben Carson, you're not smart enough to do math. I mean, that's not how they said it exactly, but the questions were just embarrassingly bad. You know, and Chris Christie, I still think his retort was the best one of all, even better than Ted Cruz. We're $19 trillion in debt. We've got ISIS and we've got Al-Qaeda, and we're talking about fantasy football. And as a result of all this, Ben Carson, Dr. Ben Carson, Michigan native, calling for a change in the debate formats following that train wreck on Wednesday, where the GOP candidates have all pretty much in unison criticized CNBC. Here's what Carson had to say.
Debates are supposed to be established to help the people get to know the candidates and get to know what's behind them and what their thinking process is, what their philosophy is. And what it's turned into is a gotcha. That's silly, and that's not really helpful for anybody. And now I've asked my staff to reach out to the other campaigns to talk about a change in format. You know, I think the whole format was just craziness. And I think one of the sentinel moments was when the audience began to boo, you know, the questioners. That tells you a lot. I mean, you got to be really bad for the whole audience to boo you like that.
Really bad. In fact, you have to be pathetically bad for the whole audience to start booing the questions. I mean, seriously, it was an economic debate. Maybe they could have talked about, say, tax policy. Most of these candidates have a tax plan to simplify the tax code, to figure out who should pay more taxes, who should say pay less, how we're going to fund the government, how we're going to get off the middle classes back with better tax rates. We didn't talk about that. No, we want to talk about fantasy football and who could throw food at each other. I agree with Dr. Carson on this one. It's time to change the format so we can actually have a conversation, figure out what the candidates believe, how they would lead the country, how they would step up. Still to come on the program today, it'll be Congressman Mike Bishop. He'll be here to talk about Paul Ryan as the new Speaker of the House and the budget that he didn't vote for. He is one of those that said, no, we can't just take off the debt ceiling and just, you know, have at it. We'll talk about that. Plus, 500,000 more could lose Obamacare subsidies in the near future. That and so much more. But as I said, I wanted to talk about the environment today and different things going on in the environment, kind of the theme for today, because there are so many articles that have piled up on my desk about the state of green America, I suppose. And the Obama administration is announcing another $120 million in grants to boost solar energy, even though new reports indicate a centerpiece of the administration's green energy plan is actually a carbon polluter. Located in Southern California's Mojave Desert, the $2.2 billion Ivan Pass solar electric generating system benefited from... Now, hear this. Ivan Pass got $1.6 billion from the Energy Department in a loan guarantee. And then Ivan Pass got $540 million, almost a third of that money, from the Treasury Department in a stimulus grant to pay off their loan guarantee. So they took taxpayer money and a loan guarantee. Then they took taxpayer money to pay off their loan guarantee. And Democrats and liberals and green Nazis applauded this because they don't understand circular math. You wonder why we have mathematical problems in this country? I don't. They can't do basic math. Well, yeah, but we paid it off with it with a grant over here, so it didn't cost us anything. It was free, Steve. It was free. Really? But despite the mathematical problems, listen to this. Here's other mathematical problems. The plant is producing carbon emissions at nearly twice the rate that compels other power plants and companies to participate in California's cap-and-trade program. That's because the plant relies on natural gas as a supplementary fuel. Now, why is that? Well, gee, even in sunny California, these vast solar farms don't get enough sunlight to produce enough electricity to produce the kind of energy they're supposed to. According to the Riverside Press Enterprise, the plant burned enough natural gas in 2014 to emit 46,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide. But Ivanpah, while in the cap-and-trade program, is still considered a renewable energy source because it technically produces more from solar. These are your taxpayer dollars at work. I'm glad you go to work every day. Because this is how the government is using your money. Built by BrightSource and operated by NRG, the Ivanpah Project has been mired in controversy from day one. Taxpayer advocates object to the federal support. Environmentalists say it would hurt the endangered tortoise. And even worse, the environmentalists that are demanding we build such things are outraged because of the tortoise that might be killed. And worse, they say hundreds, maybe thousands of birds are quote-unquote fried by the heat radiating off the solar panels. Oh, you can fry an egg. And apparently you can fry a goose. Or a duck. Or a cormorant. Or a condor. Whoa, what's on the menu today, Shane? Condor on the side, you know?
Not very tasty.
Do you like it? Well, it tastes a lot like eagle.
Or owl.
Or owl. Spotted owl.
Yeah.
They're smaller. They're more tender. This is a another prime example of good intentions gone bad. So here you have the green Nazis, the green movement, demanding that we get 1.6 gallons of water in our toilet to flush, period, which takes three times to work. That you have to have these light bulbs that, you know, save energy, but of course they have to be disposed of in a very special way because they hold lead and mercury. These little incandescent these little bulbs you have, you know, the curlicue bulbs. And so they demand that we build these things like windmills that also chop birds in half and solar panels that cook birds. They demand we have these, but then they demand we don't have these because of the endangered desert tortoise and the birds that are being fried. We must have green energy, but we can't have it because it'll kill everybody. Which brings us back to the topic we were having here, the conversation we were having here a little bit ago, about the voluntary human extinction movement. The voluntary human extinction movement, because at the end of the day, most of these radical leftist environmental wackos, they don't like people to begin with. They don't like you. They don't like me. They think the short-term solution is to eliminate people altogether. And I say amen to that. Let's start with the environmental movement. You guys first. 14 after on the Steve Gruber Show. It's Free for All Friday. What are your thoughts?
Michigan, born and raised with Midwestern values and Michigan common sense.
Yeah, I'm gonna tell my tale. Come on.
All right, it's Friday, and the phone number is 888-900-9966. 888-900-9966. A brand new Speaker of the House in place now, as you know, Paul Ryan. Something he said he never thought he would do, but here he is. Will it change Washington? I don't know. Isn't it interesting that before Paul Ryan was able to take the gavel, a new budget is rammed through, one that takes a cap off spending limits, that, you know, takes away the debt ceiling. I mean, what's that mean? That we'll be $20, $21, $22 trillion in debt by the time Obama leaves office? How do you fix that? I don't know the answer. Maybe our next guest does. Congressman Mike Bishop here, joining us again, Republican from Michigan. Congressman, welcome back to the program.
Good morning.
So I know that you voted against this this budget, so-called, but how do we turn this down? I mean, we, the people of America, sent the Republicans en masse to Congress in November of 2014, and yet it feels like the Democrats won. It feels like, you know, Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi are still in charge, because everything that the president wanted this year, and I mean everything, seems to have made its way through. Am I wrong?
Well, there's not everything in there. I did vote against it. I didn't think that this budget represented the same level of urgency that I feel for the crisis, fiscal crisis this country's in. But there were reforms in this budget that had some redeeming value that I would support in the future, that ensure the stability of Social Security going forward, that address some of the spikes in Medicare premium increases for seniors. I think it represented the right priorities when it came to the issue of national defense and properly funding our military. But I agree with you. These kind of budgets that come through, especially the two-year budgets, they have too much spending and not enough control for Congress. And that's why I didn't vote for it. And I also was very concerned about our farmers who were taking a shot this budget as well. And the reinsurance program for flooding, and I'm very concerned about that. So there are some definite downsides to this budget. There were some upsides, but I don't blame you at all for any skepticism you might have about it.
I have a ton of it, but here's the thing: we're going to bring in about $3.5 trillion in this fiscal year. It seems we were at 3.3 last year. We would be at 3.5, 3.6 trillion, an all-time record, Congressman. I mean, unbelievable amounts of money coming in, $3.5 trillion, give or take a few pennies. I mean, what's a couple of billion dollars between friends? The point being is, our national debt is six times the largest amount of money ever brought in by any government ever in the history of the world. We're six times deeper than that in debt. How, if we started today, which we haven't, but if we started today, how would we ever dig ourselves out?
Well, that's a good question. And again, the reason why I voted against this budget, I think dramatic steps need to be taken in a different direction. I do believe that, the current, the new speaker, Paul Ryan, despite the fact he did vote for this, has a strong belief in changing the way the system operates. And I know that he looks at this as an opportunity, because we've got now this budget issue off the table for 2 years, gives him a chance to address some of those reforms that he's been wanting to address. But you're going to need substantial reforms to a lot of different areas of our government, including the entitlement reform that Paul Ryan's been talking about, tax reform. This country, I just look back on my days in state government and the way Michigan ran its operation, and we were in a fiscal death spiral. And this is one of those moments in our nation's history, probably the most significant moment in our nation's history, that if we don't get it under control now, we're going to lose it for good. And
well, I don't see anybody. Nobody's reaching for the wheel. That's the problem, Congressman. We're on the line with Congressman Mike Bishop. You're right. If we don't get it under control now, we're in a death spiral. Nobody's doing anything to put it under control. They just lifted the cap on, you know, the debt limit. There's no cap for the next 2 years. You mentioned Michigan. We're $150 billion in the hole. You know, the state, you know, right, that's three times the budget here in Michigan. And that's true. I mean, Illinois, California, Texas, they're all in trouble. There's only like three states that don't have huge debt problems. Three out of 50. So this whole mindset of spend, big government, it's destroying people. Even these little towns that I come from have debt that they can't figure out how to pay. And yet they're going to the polls and saying, well, let's build a bigger school and a nicer football field. What the hell is wrong with people?
I can't answer that question, because I agree with you, and I have long since believed that, in my 4 years of state government, my last 4 years of state government, we actually reduced the size of government with a Democrat governor. And the reason why we did it was because of that very issue. We had gotten to the point where we could not control the debt anymore, and it was controlling us. And this country has got to face the reality that dramatic changes have got to be made, and across the board, and it goes for every level of government, but in particular our federal government, that has sunk itself into a 18 plus trillion-dollar hole. The deficit's going to grow, as you said. We're not going to bring in the same amount of revenue. And this is a real crisis. And I'm telling you, I agree with you. Paul Ryan has a big task ahead to lead this conference. I know that you're not seeing the kind of changes you want to see right now. I'm not either. I'm frustrated. I do believe that the new members that have come in my freshman class in particular believe very strongly in the urgency of the situation. And I will tell you that I'm not going to serve in Congress if I can't make a difference in the future. I will continue to push as hard as I can to make a difference. But to me, we can't wait any longer. And I'm going to give Paul Ryan the benefit of the doubt that he's going to step up and be that leader that we're looking for.
Well, I hope you're right, because the budget time bomb is ticking louder every day. And, Congressman, I wish we had a lot more time to talk about it, because you and I could sort this out for a while. But I do appreciate you coming here. I do appreciate that maybe Paul Ryan will take us in a different direction. And I remain mildly optimistic that you're right about that, and I appreciate you stopping in today.
Of course. Thank you very much.
There you have it. Congressman Mike Bishop, everybody. He voted no on the budget, as well he should have. It was the right thing to do. Where do we go from here? I don't know. We'll continue on the road on the Steve Gruber Show after this.
Keeping you in touch with Michigan and the world.
In the spirit of Free for All Friday, let's take a quick call off the Common Sense Hotline. The number, by the way, 888-900-9966. Frank in DeWitt.
Good morning. Great show, as it always is. You were talking about school reform and how terrible it was. And folks, there is something you can do out there for your kids to stop them from being brainwashed by this Common Core garbage and the public school sausage machine. You can homeschool your kids, take them out of the public schools. It is remarkably affordable. Don't think that you can't do it. You can. If you love your kids, you can do it. The public schools are not good enough for your kids. Take them out and save them.
All right, Frank. Greatly appreciate you checking in today. There you have it, Frank from DeWitt. You can join in, 888-900-9966. Your calls are encouraged. You know, whatever's on your mind, we'll talk about it. We're going to change directions here for a moment. We're going to get up, get a bird's eye view, if you will. And we're going to get a bird's eye view of orchards and farming and the use of drones in agriculture. Amy Irish Brown, an MSU Extension educator, here to join us and tell us more about it. Amy, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
I've heard a variety of uses for drones, but I suppose inspecting apple trees and so forth is a new direction, or maybe it's not. It's new to me for sure.
Sure. I think we're just at the infancy of trying to figure out how this technology might be used in orchards. There's a lot of ideas being thrown out there, and the technology needs to be developed to maybe put some of those into practice. It's one thing to have a drone fly over an orchard, it's another to get something practical and useful out of that information.
Sure. You know, and I've grown up here in southern Michigan, and I've watched farming go from something not particularly high tech in many areas to today. You know this, of course. If you get inside a combine or one of these large tractors that are as big as my house, some of these pieces of equipment, you know, they're all run by GPS. They all have the computer controlled, climate controlled. It's like being it's like driving a super ship or something. I mean, everything is controlled. It's like being on an aircraft carrier, all the technology involved now. And so I guess going to drones is the natural extension of technology in making agriculture even more productive.
Right. And in orchards, we grow things, out of shrinking things down. We have all these high-density dwarfing trees in apple orchards today. So kind of the opposite end of the agricultural spectrum that you just described. We have small tractors and rows that are only 12 feet apart that we have to drive through. And so we're looking at drones as a way to, you know, perhaps you would fly your drone with some type of an infrared camera that has a spectrum that can measure insects. And then you would tie that information back into your sprayer technology that you would only spray the area that needed to be sprayed as you're driving up and down the row. Or maybe there's other applications for it for one of the best ones I heard was for potentially for birds, particularly in cherries. Birds can be a big trouble for us at near harvest time. So maybe the drones will go up and fly autonomously on their own, scare birds away, and growers are free to take care of other tasks then. So,
see, now that would be a good video.
At some point it might work.
Yeah, that'd be a great video, you know, the drone versus the blackbird, you know, in a dogfight out there fighting for the cherries. You know, I'm telling you.
Crows would be the ones that make me nervous because they can be kind of aggressive.
Crows, yeah, they have a very smart bird, yeah. We're on the line with Amy Irish Brown, MSU Extension educator. Well, and the other thing that comes to mind, you know, we had some big storms in Michigan earlier this year where crops like grapes and apples were pretty heavily damaged in many areas in northern Michigan. And I would assume that a drone, you could go in and find out what the hail damage is to an apple crop, for example, in these, like you said, these densely planted dwarf trees where they're really dense in their production. And determine, what is your crop loss?
Yeah,
you could talk about crop loss and figure out how you could mitigate what your situation was.
Sure, and that's what the demo that I held out in an orchard here recently, some University of Michigan students were working on a drone project, and they were able, their ideas, they were able to fly over a whole orchard with cameras and stitch all those pictures together to do something at a faster or more real-time situation than, say, some of the overhead camera, you know, the Google-type pictures that we get now. They're only updated every so often. So they would be able to give you that bird's-eye view that is a little different always than from standing on the ground.
You know, at the end of the day, Amy, whether it's the giant combines and machines that are working and using technology in the big fields to densely planted orchards like you're talking about, you know, where smaller tractors come through, but you can focus on the pests that are challenging your crop or crop damage or whatever it may be. Technology has certainly helped the American farmer and farmers around the world to produce more and better crops year after year, it seems to me.
You are correct. I mean, I've been an extension educator for just about 25 years, and it's very different than today than it was just 20 years ago, and that's amazing. And nobody should ever think that agriculture is not at the forefront of technology. We're always looking for ways to make the tasks that we have to do easier and better and more efficient. That's the name of the game.
And when you look at yields, whether it's corn or apples or grapes or whatever it may be, the yields, it just seems to me, I keep reading I read recently, record corn, record beans, record apple, record walnut crops. I mean, all sorts of crops continue to set all-time records for production and harvest, which to me, I mean, that's impressive.
Sure, and that's because we're, I think, fine-tuning. We're able to use technology to help us keep track of a lot of things. Growing apples is one of the most complex crops you can grow. There's so many things to keep track of. And anything you do to make that more efficient, in turn, hopefully, can give you a better yield so that you're doing everything at the cutting end.
It makes me wonder, you know, a lot of kids, and obviously Michigan State University is one of the university's land-grant institution at the Center of Agricultural Education and Research and so forth. What about kids going into agriculture for a field of study these days? You don't hear a lot about it, but certainly there are some great positions and great career opportunities in agriculture.
Well, absolutely. I think working as an extension educator for a career has been very fulfilling for me. And in general, I think there is a little bit of slight concern that we're not getting students coming through some of our agricultural institutions. And we're looking at, you know, in a broad picture worldwide, a larger population to feed, and that's going to take smart people to do that. And the field of agriculture is, if people like to work outdoors and like to meet people of all different personalities, I think agriculture is a wonderful place for them to look at as a career. And there's huge opportunities, very diverse opportunities out there.
Yeah, I would say if you like really hardworking, smart people, roll up your sleeves and go spend a day at the farm and pick your farm. I don't care if it's a livestock farm or a grain farm or an apple orchard. There's always work to be done on the farm, I can assure you.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it's a busy place to be.
It certainly is. Well, I appreciate you stopping by. Amy Irish Brown from the MSU Extension Service and an educator there. Amy, great conversation. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right, it's Free for All Friday, my friends. 888-900-9966. I think apples are bipartisan. I like the Honeycrisp apples that come from Michigan. I think they're the finest apple ever made. Honeycrisp. My father used to like Fuji. Shane likes Fuji. But Honeycrisp, my friends, made in Michigan, is the finest apple that I think I've ever tasted. Because Michigan apples, despite what they may tell you, are the finest in the world. See, it's pure Michigan, my friends, on a Free for All Friday.
Covering Michigan and the world from his bunker below the bridge. Here is Steve Gruber.
Well, if you want to hide from the revelers and don't feel like trick-or-treating, so it is. Be a good weekend to get out. You know, it's, I don't know, isn't it scary movie time? Is that what happens this time of year, scary movies? Goes on. Mm-hmm. Well, this is a communications business, just for the record. Nodding, they don't hear you. Yeah. Nodding.
Yeah. I think that there is, the Friday the 13th probably has a 42nd
installment. I don't know. We better ask our good friend Ron Van Timmeren from Celebration Cinemas. Ron, welcome to the program.
Hey, what's up, Steve? Hey, Shane. Sorry, no Friday the 13th, 42 this week. you know what? It's Hollywood is not really making scary movies at Halloween time anymore, it doesn't seem like.
Why is that?
The Paranormal Activity thing did a little business last weekend, but...
But overall, they don't do, they've moved away from that. All right, so what's good this week, then?
Well, we got some big stars in some interesting-looking movies, being in the communication business like you are, you might be interested in Truth. What? Truth? In the news business? That's what Dan Rather found out the hard way, and that's Robert Redford playing Dan Rather, Cate Blanchett, his producer. They were the ones that took on then-President George W. Bush's military service. Remember, they got in a little trouble for that?
Yeah, the guy that, fabricating materials or wherever it came from. Yeah, you know who busted him on that? It was a font issue. They said, well, that font, that style, didn't exist back when these were supposedly made. And, technical error busted by the high-tech. Some geek looking at that said, hey, that's not right. Anyhow, so it is. Yeah, I remember it.
Yeah, interesting story, and getting the best reviews of any of the new movies out this weekend. So Truth, looking good. Also, another political drama, if you will, Our Brand is Crisis, Sandra Bullock and Billy Bob Thornton playing rival political strategists in a presidential election in Bolivia. What do you think of that one?
I like that one a lot. I've been watching that one a lot. First of all, I like her. I think she's terrific, and Billy Bob, come on. I mean, look at these. I mean, he's shaved clean as a cue ball, right? He just has that look about him, like he's just a little bit off.
Yeah, he's like James Carville, maybe.
Exactly. Yeah,
the striking similarities there. And, yeah, I do love Billy Bob Thornton. I think he's a terrific actor, and he plays sort of that weaselly, greasy, political strategist type role fairly well. And reviews have been so for Our Brand is Crisis. That's rated R. And then Bradley Cooper stars in the movie Burnt, which is a foodie, comedy, drama, love story, co-starring Sienna Miller. That, again, getting... dubious reviews, but everybody loves Bradley Cooper, and I like a good foodie movie, too.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, in fact, my wife wants to see that one. She likes that sort of thing, and we like Bradley Cooper as well. And Ivy said, I think we should see that one. I said, hey, if I can go to the movies with you, I'm cool. I'm good. I'm good to go.
Yeah, I'm cool.
Exactly.
So
I'd love to.
I missed it for the last couple of weeks, so I caught up with a couple movies like Bridge of Spies, which was fantastic, of course, starring Tom Hanks, directed by Steven Spielberg. I saw the Steve Jobs movie. That was very, very good. Michael Fassbender, he's going to get an Oscar nomination for that role. And then next week, the Hollywood holiday movie season kicks off with a bang. Spectre, the new James Bond movie. Be the first to see that next Thursday night, early shows of Spectre.
There you go. And The Martian's still doing well at the box office, right?
You know what, Steve? I think it'll be number one again. 4 out of the 5 weeks in October, I think Martian's got a chance. None of the late October movies doing much business at the box office, so we need a blockbuster. James Bond arriving just in time.
Yeah, and I don't really, and I'll be honest, Ron, I don't pay much attention to James Bond movies, But that one really looks good to me. It really does. I like Land Rovers and Range Rovers, and the fact that the scene where they're coming through sideways with one of those four-wheel drive trucks, I'm thinking, oh, that's cool. I like that. Yeah, so I'm going to probably see that
one. Yeah, they spent a fortune making this new Bond movie, and it looks fantastic on the big screen. I did get a chance to see it. You're going to love it. The new Bond girl, everything looks great in this new James Bond movie.
All right, well, go wipe your mouth, Ron. I appreciate that. And you have a great weekend, my friend. Enjoy Halloween.
Will do. You too, guys. See you at the movies.
There you have it, everybody. Ron Van Timmeren. And, you know, I don't, I've never been a big fan of James Bond movies. I mean, for whatever reason, just never my thing. But the previews for this one looks, you know, pretty good to me. And there is a scene where I think it's a, must be a Land Rover. It's British Leyland. It's not a, you know, it's a Land Rover coming through sideways. An old, you know, the boxy one in the previews I've been watching. It's awesome.
Is it the old version?
It looks like it's the old box. I mean, it could be a newer one. You know, I don't own one, so it's hard for me to keep track of. But Our Brand is Crisis is probably the number one movie on my 2C list. Our Brand is Crisis, Sandra Bullock and Billy Bob Thornton down there in South America trying to win an election. So that's probably going to be my...
There's a couple other good actors in there. I can't think what the guy who's playing the candidate down there.
Anthony Mackie is the other guy. So there's some good stuff there. And then, you know, probably go see that movie. Now, still to come today, and I need to know, what did you say your costume was? You're going to be a what?
A dorky.
Not a minion?
Disco dancer.
And why?
Because you can go to Volunteers of America and get everything for about $3.
How to design on a dime for Halloween. Thank you, everybody. Shane will have his recipes up later on the show as well.
It worked.
fine. But we're going to talk about the offensive costumes out there. In fact, there are whole groups together at college campuses. We're talking about this at the top of the hour here. Is your costume insensitive? Universities are putting out counselors where you can call the hotline to find out if your costume is going to offend someone. And apparently, being Caitlyn, I mean, there's just no good time to be Caitlyn if you're going to do that. So that's one of the most offensive costumes, apparently. Dressing up as any sort of a native person anywhere from the planet, completely inappropriate, I'll just tell you right now.
They're putting up posters on campuses. Says Halloween checklist, is your costume offensive? And it has a list of criteria.
And we'll find out what that criteria is from different universities, because we don't want to think too. We don't want to think too much. We'll do the thinking for you and tell you what's offensive. Straight ahead on this free-for-all Friday edition of the Steve Gruber Show.